Every Sunday evening at 5 o'clock, I cue the Simply Folk theme song, the one that we just heard. It was composed and performed by Bruce Burnside for Simply Folk over 30 years ago. Bruce is based in Bayfield, and he made the trip to Wisconsin Public Radio's Superior Bureau to talk with me about what he's been up to. Welcome to Simply Folk, Bruce.
Thank you, Stephanie.
In a way, you're with Simply Folk listeners in spirit every week because we hear that wonderful theme song. It has such a happy vibe, and it kind of alerts listeners around the state that it's time to enter a certain musical frame of mind. Do you remember creating that for us?
Oh, yeah. He was Tom Erickson then.
Tom Martin Erickson.
We got to know each other because he was recording at folk clubs around Madison, and I was playing at those clubs, and he asked me to write he had this idea for the show, and he asked me to write a theme for it, and so it was, I think, a Sunday night. I went into the studio about 9 o'clock, and I had a 1938 Martin D28. And 1902 Fairbanks Electric banjo, and a Snakehead Gibson mandolin. And I had worked out the guitar part, I just went for it. And at the end of the session, it took about an hour, and at the end of the session he said, "You know, that actually works out to be exactly 1 minute long." So it was just sort of going with the flow, so to speak.
Well, that's sometimes the best way, isn't it? Well, it's worked for, we're in our 33rd year now. And for me, when I used to be a listener, it would help me shift my ears and get into a whole different mode. It's just a wonderful theme, and we're very grateful for it.
Well, you're welcome.
You talked about your Martin and your banjo. When did your fascination with fretted instruments start, and how?
Let's see. Well, I was at a summer camp, and I think I got a guitar there. The camp counselor had a Stella guitar and he was going to move up. He was going to move up to a better guitar. So I bought the Stella guitar for $2.
Oh, wow.
And it had the neck, we call them necks like bricks. It had a huge neck, and you could cut cheese with how high the strings were off the fingerboard.
Cut your fingers, too.
And I struggled with that for a while, and I just kept moving up. I think I got a Marvel tone after that. And I didn't realize that the nut wasn't right, so I put a capo on the first fret so that it would play, because it rattled if I didn't. My part of it was my father was a collector of cartridges and guns, so I think collecting was kind of something I'd seen as a little kid. But I never really thought of myself as a collector. I still don't, because I get stuff I'm playing. So I figure if I play it, I can rationalize having it.
Right.
And if I have stuff I don't play, then I'll turn into a collector.
Well, one thing that I love about your CDs is that in the liner notes, you often identify the instruments that you're playing, and there are sometimes photos of them. And that's the case for your brand new CD. It's just released, called For All the World to See. And there's a beautiful photo in the liner notes of these guitars and old banjos and mandolins. And
I love the sound of those things. You know, people don't really know anymore what the American history of fretted instruments. You know, Wisconsin is probably where the mandocello was invented in the 1880s, and when Orville Gibson started his company, it was refurbished, I think, in 1904. And by the teens, he had a mandolin orchestra array of instruments, and if you, you know, he had tremendous salespeople, but if you had a group and everybody in that group played a Gibson instrument, then you could take a photograph, send the photograph to Gibson, and they would publish it in the Gibson magazine. And there were, you know, mandolin quartets were all the rage at that period. And there were mandolin quartets in all over the world. I mean, I think there were even in Tokyo.
Hmm. I know we had a couple of mandolin orchestras in Milwaukee back
right,
in the
20s. Right, the Bon-Ami is the oldest in the country.
Let's listen to something with some of these instruments. I'm thinking of the one called Tears of the Pueblo. It's an instrumental. Can you tell us the background of this song and the instruments that we'll hear?
I wrote this down in Santa Fe after going on a tour with a Native American of some of the sites that were... It's a real old area because it's a way to get through the Rockies, and so it was a trading area for Native Americans. And the kiva is a circular structure in the ground, and it was a very powerful representation of women, and I was just struck by what this man had to say about it, and so I wrote the tune down there. And the instrumentation you're going to hear is I'm playing a 1944 D-18, Martin D-18, for the lead, because I wanted a real male, strong-voiced guitar rather than use a smaller-bodied guitar. And then there's a tremolo section I wrote for the mandola and mandolin. And the lead instruments are guitar and Ed Willett on cello and Andy D on dobro.
Here's Tears of the Pueblo. Tears of the Pueblo. If you're just joining me, joining Simply Folk, you're listening to an interview with Bruce Burnside, who is a multi-instrumentalist and a songwriter, a singer, a teacher, a poet, and he's just released a new CD called For All the World to See. And that was one of the instrumental tunes from that CD. Bruce, you can feel that experience in Santa Fe really touched you deeply. It comes through in the music, just gorgeous.
Thank you.
This CD has a wonderful feel to it, and you've got some commentary about social issues, some very deep feelings. How do you write? Does an issue just arise, or do you get a melody in your head? Do the lyrics come first for the songs with lyrics?
Well, let's see. A little background about me. I worked through an outreach program in schools for a few years, and then started a nonprofit organization that did residencies in schools. And it was basically a songwriting residency with performances by the students. And I, you know, did this for about 15 years. So I had to learn to write songs from the lyrics, and I had to learn to write melodies and then add the lyrics later.
Hmm.
So when I was doing those programs in front of the students, I would a lot of times include them in the creative process of writing the melody. So I would, you know, be under a time pressure to actually write a melody in 10 minutes or 15 minutes.
Holy mackerel, that is pretty quick.
And it's really good discipline, because you have to be sensitive to that first emotional feeling that takes you in a certain direction. So it's just sort of tuning in and then fine-tuning that. And so the answer to your question is I've done it from both directions for a long time. It depends on what I'm trying to do. You know, there's a little zone you can kind of go into. And it's for me, it's all based in letting myself express whatever it is that's trying to come out.
One of the songs on the new CD is called Pulling This Flatboat. And in the notes, you mentioned that some of this relying on others to do hard work and good work is still part of our lives, but it's lost some of the face-to-face contact. What was the impetus for this song, and what is its meaning for you?
Well, I think it's a very spiritual song, in the sense that it's got one of my favorite verses in it, which is the one about I pull this flatboat, water goes somewhere I ain't been. More I let happen, more gets better. Rain brings water back again.
Mm.
And I think raising children and just, you know, getting older and hopefully wiser, you realize that there are people that travel the world that experience a lot of different things and become richer for it. And there are people like Greek fishermen who go out on the ocean every day, like their grandfather and their father before them, and they know everything about life too. So I'm not saying that, you know, you shouldn't do this or you shouldn't do that. I'm just saying that if you're patient with learning about things, you can be sitting in one place doing the same thing over and over and over, and the answers will come. And the other thing is doing, you know, in this particular song, the man is doing something they used to have to do to get across rivers, which was, it's a rope across the river, and you go hand over hand on the rope pulling a raft. And that's the way that people ferried across the river. And so he's performing a service that seems menial, but it's really a significant, you know, if somebody needs to get there, that's the way they do it. And I think that a lot of, you know, school teachers, policemen, firemen, you know, we, with 9/11, we sort of were awakened to that. Their jobs are just as important as CEOs. And we need to remember that. So that's sort of part of what that song is about.
It's also pretty spiritual. Yeah. Let's hear Pullin' This Flatboat. It's got some lovely vocals as well. This is my guest, Bruce Burnside and company.
See all these people by the river, come to this river to cross on by. I pull this flatboat across the river, guideline to the other side. Water keeps moving, I keep pulling. Water goes somewhere I ain't been. More I let happen, more gets better. Rain brings water back again. Like this river, life keeps moving. Babies to children to on their own. See the splendor, not the sorrow. Like this river, have your own song. Faith lets us all cross over to the unknown other side. Each crossing gives us courage that everything is all right. See it, some don't know that life's a treasure, sure as you're born. What would you pay to cross over mighty wide river as you can see? Some pay plenty, some pay little, some pay nothing right for. People, God Almighty, come to the river to cross on by. I pull this flatboat across this river, I'll be going by and by. Faith lets us all cross over to the unknown other side.
Pulling This Flatboat, a song by Bruce Burnside from his brand new CD called For All the World to See. Bruce, it strikes me that one sounds a little bit like a hymn, and some of the other songs on the CD strike me as prayers. One even has that word in the title. Do you think of your songs as prayers in a way?
Sometimes that's the way they come out. I don't, you know, I hadn't planned on, I mean, I've written a couple of gospel tunes. There's a gospel tune on here that is a reggae tune. I thought that was kind of interesting. But I, you know, this CD is essentially songs that I've written over the past 10, 12, 13 years that just never made it to the other CDs. And I didn't want them to get lost. Well, so I put them on this CD.
Yeah, we're certainly glad for it. There's a, as you mentioned, a wide variety of feeling. That the very first song, the title song to the CD, starts out in a minor chord with these strong downbeats, and then there's a snare that comes in. You have some gorgeous instrumentals, and then this one with the beautiful vocals and harmonies. It's really it's a wonderful synthesis, but quite a nice variety. Would you put yourself in a certain genre, or do you feel like you're crossing many genres?
I don't know. I've studied American musical history for a long time, and I started going backwards from 1963, and I ended up around 1931 with the invention of the banjo. And I've just kind of, at this point in my career, I'm just writing what seems, I'm trying to say with the things I think are important to say. And I have, fortunately, a bag of understanding about Delta blues, urban blues, rural Appalachian music, modal, Scottish and Irish and British immigration music, the turn of the century creation of early jazz, the, you know, jug band music of the 20s and 30s. I studied Leadbelly for a long time and went back into the banjo orchestra field of the 1880s and 90s. Studied minstrelsy all the way back to 1843. Studied music of the Civil War. And so what's coming out now is just sort of bits and pieces, and also, like I said before, it's just, you know, there's a certain amount of emotion that's what interests me. It's how can you say something to somebody in the simplest, most stripped-down way to communicate the emotion that you have.
Well, you do that very effectively and certainly informed by your studies. And I know you formally studied history and studied English, and it sounds like this has all come together to produce this marvelous music. There's a fun one on the CD.
There are a couple of fun ones.
Yes, there are. I'm thinking of one called That Racehorse. What's that all about?
Well, I'm sworn to secrecy.
Uh-huh.
You could read Mark Halperin and kind of get into sort of science fiction reality writing. It's a story song about how people sometimes do things that are slightly a little off center. And the thing is, you have to figure out what the racehorse is.
Mm-hmm.
And once you do that, then you have your own interpretation of what this song is about. What did I say on the liner notes to call? I think I called it
a mythical sounding story based on reality.
Yep, that's it.
Well, and I think we've all met someone that could fit the definition of the racehorse. Why don't we listen to That Racehorse? This is Bruce Burnside. Thank you.
Have you heard of that racehorse who ran through the town? Have you heard of that woman who always ran around? She ran after power, she ran after gold. She ran after that racehorse, so the story goes. They say that that racehorse had magic in his stare. They say that that woman was caught unaware. All she could think of was slowing him down. She ran after that racehorse all over town. His sparks would fly when he ran by. Flashes in the night. Up they glide, rising high, climbing out of sight. Life never once had a wish to be saddled with a wife. The wind in his hair was the life that he chose. She ran after that racehorse, so the story goes.
Racehorse, Bruce Burnside, along with many other musicians. You've got some great musicians on the CD that you work with. Are these some of the musicians from Lake Superior, Big Top Chautauqua?
Most of them are, yeah. Ed Willits, the band director, he plays cello and guitar. Andy D plays slide guitar and guitar. I think that's it. Cal Altman was the bass player, and his since moved on, and Jane Alexson is the bass player now. I drafted a few people that I just really like to work with. In fact, I wrote a couple of these songs with them in mind. Laura McKenzie's a great whistle player, and so I wrote some stuff with her, thinking about her. And we have the keyboard player for the BCO is Severin Bainan, but he lives in L.A. and only comes out in the summer. And so I trapped him and put him in a couple of these tunes.
Now, Laurie and the Lads, right? Am I thinking of Laurie McKenzie and the Lads, the flute and whistle player?
Yeah. She's in a number of different groups, so I can't keep track of all of it.
Mm. Well, you also play in Lost Nation String Band, and as we mentioned, with Big Top Chautauqua, and you're the artistic director of Forgotten Wisdom, and you also lead the Bruce Burnside Quartet. Sounds like you keep fairly busy performing. Is that
Well, I'm slacking off on my solo performing. I've just got too much stuff I've been writing. One of the songs on here, Bring Down the Lights, is from a stage show called Sick and Tired. It's about two old vaudeville performers, Mr. Sick and Mr. Tired. And I need to finish that stage play. So that's one thing. And I've got, I wrote a NEA grant a couple years ago to orchestrate a Civil War show I wrote, a stage show. And so I did that with the Eau Claire Chamber Orchestra, and it was really fun. It's a 26-piece orchestra. It was fun to sing with that. So I've recorded them, and I'm working on a new CD of the Civil War stuff with that group.
Well, you have a wonderful CD of called Unsung Stories of the Civil War. And for this new one you're talking about, did you do the orchestrations and the arrangements for the orchestra?
No, I had Ivar Lundy do the arranging because he's the conductor.
Well, that sounds like another good project to look forward to.
Yeah, it's really fun. We've gotten to be good friends, and I keep writing. You know, I don't know if it's I don't do crossword puzzles, so I've got a girth of material yet to be recorded. So I'm just methodically going about doing it.
Well, and we're listening as they come out. You've been releasing CDs now for, 15, 20 years or so? Did you have recordings before that?
Yeah. I had, when I was in high school, let's see, how do I quickly tell you this story? I started a club. I went to a high school out in Massachusetts, and it was a boarding school. And we only got to have a date with a girl once a week. So I started a folk music society, and then figured out a tour, coincidentally, of girls' schools. And what I wanted to do is I wanted to have a jug band, so it took a couple of years to talk various people on campus into it, but I finally picked the people I wanted in this band. So I had a jug band, and we ended up cutting an album my senior year. No. So that's the first recording I did.
Wow. That's quite a project for a high school senior.
Well, it was a bold move, because I walked into the we recorded it in Boston, and I walked into the studio and said, you know, we want to record an album. And the guy said, well, this is how much it's going to cost. So I went and sold the album to people on campus before we'd cut it to raise the money to make the down payment. And then we snuck away in the dark of night to go down to Boston and record it. It was quite an experience. I mean, it's a great story. It was fun. But it was a lot of fun to do it. And I didn't do much recording in college. I did a lot of playing. I played electric blues guitar for 4 years in a bar, four nights a week.
Oh,
and
boy.
Worked, one of the faculty members, his wife was from England, and so we had a duo. We usually had an acoustic bass player with us, and we did concerts. She was a decent rhythm guitar player and really good singer, and you know, so I did that for a couple of years, and then I started a bluegrass band, and got a fellow who played the guitar really well, so I had to play mandolin. And what was fun about that is at the time, this was in the early 70s, there weren't any bluegrass bands around the Chicagoland area, and Vassar Clements was traveling by himself and doing club dates, and he would sort of hope people would show up that would play on stage with him. And he got to know us and liked our band, and so he talked the management into hiring us whenever he got booked into these clubs, from Chicago up to Madison. So I worked with him for like 3 years, and that was a blast.
He kind of did hillbilly jazz sort of fiddling. I mean,
yeah, he did everything. We used to play a club in Evanston, and I got to know Hartford and Norman Blake and people like that, you know. But Vassar and Jethro Burns were the kind of musicians that just filled you with joy, because they loved doing what they did, and they were so creative and outside of the box, so to speak, if they chose to be. And it was just great to be on stage with them.
Oh, what's some wonderful experiences that you've had, Bruce? Well, we're going to finish with one more song from the CD. I'm speaking with Bruce Burnside, and he's an instrumentalist, songwriter, singer based in northern Wisconsin, and his brand new CD is called For All the World to See. If you'd like to find out more about Bruce Burnside and his music, there is a link at simplyfolk.org, or you can visit his website, bruceburnside.com. Bruce, what would you like to finish with? I'm thinking maybe the last track on the CD. Does that sound all right? It's called The Wishing Well, and what's the background of this one?
I wrote it on the banjo, and I thought it would sound nice on the whistle, and it's just something I just threw together. I don't know what to say about it.
It's a great way to close the interview, and a wonderful track to close your CD. It's called The Wishing Well, Bruce Burnside. Thank you very much for spending time with me. And with Simply Folk listeners, we sure appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
And thanks for that wonderful theme song that we hear over and over every week on Simply Folk.